Hello, and welcome to episode 44 of the Clockwork Game Design Podcast. I'm Keith Burgun. Today I've got on the show an interview with John Schaefer. He was the lead designer on Civilization V, and he also worked on Civ 4. He's now got his own company called Conifer Games. They're making a game called At the Gates. He's been making it for at least a couple of years now. Also, I should mention that this show is supported by Patreon and our patrons. I think we've got about 45 patrons right now, and I really appreciate all the support and help that that they have been giving me. It really helps me to be able to put this show together and work on also my prototypes and my games that are really a continuation of the game design conversation. They're testing out the theories that I talk about in my articles and my podcast conversations. I really enjoy being able to bring this stuff to you, but if you want to support the show, please consider becoming a patron. Or if you can't do that, please just share, spread the word about the show. And that means a lot to me. Thank you so much. And without further ado, here is the conversation with John Schaefer. Real quick, before we get into the nitty-gritty stuff, like, let's talk a little bit about your experience of working on Civ games, maybe a little bit, and then we'll get into what you're working on now.
Sure.
Yeah. Was your first game that you worked, did you work on Civ 4 as well as 5?
I did. I was originally just a programming intern. I started there in February 2005. So I was there up through, I think, September or October when Civ 4 came out. So
were you already designing games like independently? Did you have a lot of experience doing game design by that point? Or was it like you were more of a programmer? Like, what's your background in terms of game design?
Yeah, I've always been interested in game development ever since I was very young. My father first taught me to program, I think, back when I was 8 or 9 or so. And ever since then, I've been tinkering with things on my own. Nothing too serious. I'm not really an engineer by trade, not really a programmer, but I would use programming as a means to an end. I like making little projects and games. I made a Pokemon game. I made a Dragon Ball Z game. They weren't complete by any means, but they were fun little projects for me to work on. And then I got into modding later, where I started playing Civ 3 in particular, and was actually one of the first people kind of on the modding scene there, because the initial game didn't release with the map editor. And then when it came out, I was right there waiting for it. And I think I might have been one of the very first people to make a map for Civ 3. Kind of from then, I've always been playing around with different elements in games. I also worked on some mods for Hearts of Iron. And from that point, I'd always kind of, like I said, wanted to work in games professionally. So I looked for whatever opportunity I could. And I was really in Civilization at that point. And I kept bugging the people at Firaxis. And eventually they gave in and I got an internship. So that's kind of my route into the business.
And then you got to actually, you were lead designer on 5, right? And like, what was that? What, I mean, was that like a mind-blowing, like life-changing experience?
Yes, I was. I was lead designer on Civ 5, and honestly, I didn't really think about it much at that time. It was just, and being invested in Civ was just what I did and just who I was. It wasn't. I honestly wouldn't say there was a lot of pressure on my shoulders or anything like that. As strange as that might sound, I was just doing my thing. I think about it more now than I did then. But it was something I definitely took seriously, and I invested time in. I worked way more overtime than I should have on that game, and you know, I learned a lot, and it was pretty incredible. I mean, thinking about it now, so many people know Civ 5. It's, I'll just, you know, be walking around and go to lunch, and somebody asks me about what I've done. I tell them, and they were like, "Wow, I know you? I know that game." And it's it's kind of weird sometimes, but no, it's definitely certainly opened a lot of doors for me, and was an awesome experience. Of course, as a game designer, there's a lot of things I wish I'd done differently with the game, but. That's kind of beside the point. And I guess that's why we have long careers and can continue making new projects.
For sure. And I mean, you know, something I think about a lot with Civ, and, you know, because I've also like dabbled in 4X games. I actually did publish a 4X game at one point, but it was kind of underdeveloped and stuff. But, I've struggled with the problems of 4X game design myself. And it always occurred to me that like with Civ specifically, it's this big, you know, like kind of franchise-y kind of thing. And there's so many expectations. You're kind of restricted by certain things. You can't go too far outside the box that was already established, I feel like. And I think that maybe that might have been part of why you wanted to end up making your own game. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. I think kind of being in a box, in a way, has both pluses and minuses. I mean, the minuses are kind of obvious. You know, you're restricted in terms of what you can do. Sometimes you want to do other things and you can't, or it's not a good idea. But it's also helpful because it constrains you in a way that is, I think, important sometimes, because there are so many opportunities, so many options, so many different directions to go. Sometimes you just need something to point you in some direction and say, hey, just do this thing and try to make this thing the best you can.
Right.
If you can just make literally anything, then that can be almost paralyzing sometimes. But yeah, after spending the first 6 years of my career dedicated to Civ, after spending, I don't know, 5 years prior to that, working on Civ mods, playing Civ, living, breathing, eating Civ every day. So, you know, over a decade with Civ, I was definitely ready to move on and try some new things. So, I think it having some restrictions is good initially, but then at least for me, the idea of kind of working on sequels endlessly, it didn't really appeal to me. I wanted to try out new concepts.
Cool. Yeah, and that's one of the reasons also that, like, you know, I think I'm very interested to talk to you, is that there's this idea of, I guess, making little, you know, I think there's sort of like two grand game design philosophies out there. One is like sort of nibbling around the edges of existing designs, sort of managing problems a little bit better for the next one, iterating, that kind of stuff. And then there's also like this like sort of moonshot, totally different approach, dramatically, you know, big jumps in design. And I tend to lean more on that latter side myself. And I'm really interested in seeing that, maybe that bridge between those two things. And because, you know, at the end of the day, we have to make games that people will understand and that people feel kind of familiar, even if they are doing really unfamiliar things. And so from what I've read about At the Gates, there's a lot of really cool, innovative things about it. And I don't know. So yeah, let's talk a little bit about At the Gates and just how's that going? Like, what is the, can you give me like a one line from a game design perspective? Like, what are you trying to achieve with At the Gates that maybe you haven't seen achieved before in previous games?
Mm-hmm. Sure. I guess the one line description is almost kind of obvious, but honestly, I feel like there's a lot more in the Forest genre available to play around with than we've seen so far. So, you know, trying to take the genre and push it in new directions without just completely leaving it behind in a way that, say, after MOBAs kind of took over from RTSs, there aren't really RTSs anymore. Now there's just MOBAs. Mm-hmm. I think we want to continue to see 4X games, but I want to see them grow in a different way. Developers have started to branch out more in recent years, but we're still pretty close to the traditional Civ Master of Orion, Master of Magic formula that was developed back in the early and mid-90s. So, for example, in At the Gates, one of the important elements is that the map changes on cycles, so seasons, basically. The map will freeze over in the winter, and that causes your food production to go away. But in exchange, it freezes over rivers that are normally impassable, so it opens up new areas of the map. This is the sort of stuff that has been dabbled with a little bit in other games, but it's a pretty fundamental element of At the Gates. There's also some other things. There's a single production queue, which helps address micromanagement, which is typically a pretty big problem in 4X games, especially in the late game. If you have 10 or 20 or 50 or 100 cities or planets or whatever, then that can be really, really hard to manage.
Sure.
So I wanted to try and tackle that in a new way. So one of those ways is that in At the Gates, you only have one settlement, you have one production queue. So what you choose to build is pretty important. And then there's some other smaller things like surveying of resources. So initially you kind of see a darkened version of the resource that can be one of three categories: mineral, animal, or plant. And then you have to send a surveyor or another specialized kind of unit to actually investigate what it is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these are things that changed pretty dramatically the game as a whole. So initially you might look at the game and say, oh, this looks a lot like Civ, but when you play it, you realize, oh wow, this is really quite different. There's still a lot of common elements, common ingredients, but this is a new recipe.
Right. Yeah. The first thing that you said about the map, the changes, you know, the freezing over and all that stuff. You know, the thing that one of the things that strikes me and one of our big design questions, which I guess this feeds into, is like, you know, what do we think are the biggest challenges facing 4X games? And I think one of them is something that solution is trying to fix, which is this sort of staticness that takes over at a certain point in these games, where, you know, you explore and explore and explore, and at a certain point, a lot of times the dynamism just dies off and everything kind of like becomes static and known, and there's no more exploration. That's something that's always struck me as interesting, is that, like, you know, the explore component of Civ sort of, or 4X games generally, just sort of dies off at a certain point. And it's kind of like, well, if that's important for the game, shouldn't it like always be there? That's sort of weird that it just isn't there for some of the game. And the early, I don't know. So let me just start ranting, but like, let me ask you, what do you think are some of the biggest challenges facing 4X games generally? And this might be, you know, indirectly an answer to the question of like, what is At the Gates trying to do? But what do you think, just generally speaking, are the biggest challenges, like the biggest problems with these games that you've seen as someone who's played these games a lot?
Now, you absolutely have gotten at a couple different things. I think one of the biggest ones is pacing. And this gets to exactly what you were talking about. And this is something I often say when people ask me about 4X games and what could be done different and what challenges there are. The 4Xs are exploration, expansion, exploitation, extermination. And as you exactly point out, at a certain point in the game, a third or maybe halfway through, exploration is completely done. And not just that, at a certain point, not too far after that, expansion is completely gone. So suddenly your 4X game is a 2X game. Right. And it's not nearly as fun, especially because those are the two most fun of the 4Xs. You know, some people play them as war games, but I think the general appeal is more in that exploration and expansion phase. Mm-hmm. So the general pacing, the arc of the game is an enormous challenge that's nobody has really solved thus far. And I think Civ has a very fundamental flaw in it that I'm not sure can be solved, because it is intentionally covering all of human history. And if you've explored the world, you know, by the Renaissance era, then what more is there to do?
Sure.
It's hard to continue exploring from there. Maybe there's different things you could do, like the surveying mechanic I talked about in At the Gates. But it's still not the same as just uncovering whole new land masses and seeing a new mountain range spread out before you and wondering if there's a way through it, or if you're trapped on this side of the island or something. You know, there's a different feel to it. So I think that's a pretty fundamental problem with a lot of 4X games. I think it can be solved, but you have to be pretty direct about it. Some of the other issues I think I've touched on also are micromanagement. So if you have 50 cities in the late game, or even 10 or 20, that can be a lot of busy work.
Sure.
If you have a lot of units on the map, most of the time when you're moving them around, it's not that big of a deal what you're doing with them.
Right.
And especially in the recent Civ games with one unit per tile, there's particularly quite a bit of management of units that isn't directly related to strategic concerns.
Right.
That ties into another thing, which is combat. I think combat has always been a challenge in these games because they are more focused on things like exploration and expansion, and then development, you know, exploitation. So the extermination end is kind of jammed in there in a way. Stack combat's never worked out great. One unit per tile has some big issues with it as well. Some games have tactical battle modes or some kind of stack auto resolve where, you know, you kind of combine everything into an army and then it fights another army. I think all of those have their own problems. Personally, I'm not a huge fan of putting a tactical layer in a grand strategy game. I think that's especially bad in multiplayer, but even in single player, it's kind of taking you out of the game. I know a lot of people like the Total War games, but, you know, let's be honest, it's the battle scenes that people like by and large. You know, a lot
yeah,
of people-
actually, I would like to press you more on that, because I agree with you probably even harder than you agree with you on that topic of like, of having these like different screens, you know, like having this other sort of a game inside of a game. It's kind of like the worst example of this is, you have your Civ army and you like drag it into the enemy city. And in order to resolve whether your army successfully conquers the city, you play like the app closes and it loads up like a chess app and you play a match of chess. And if you win the match of chess, then you know what I'm saying? Like it's this totally separate, disconnected system game inside of a game. And to me, that's that causes a lot of problems. People usually do like what you're saying with Total War. People usually identify one of those two systems as like the real game. But yeah, like why is that a problem? You mentioned the one thing that you mentioned is that it has a weird feeling to it, but like why other, you know, game design wise is that always a problem to have like this game inside of a game thing with tactical battles and all that kind of thing? Or is it sometimes something that works, or what do you think?
I think it can work if you lean really heavily on the tactical end and then you end up with a game that is more like some of the Total War games or an XCOM, where really the tactical battles are the meat of the game, and then there's kind of a lighter strategic layer on top. The Total War games have been adding more and more depth to the strategic layer, which I think a lot of the longtime fans kind of want to see, because typically they are not really playing it so much for the fancy looking tactical battle scenes, and a lot of people just auto resolve those things. I think Total War is in kind of a weird place where they're pushing towards more balance between the two, but it is pretty tough. But I think in terms of just a strict design sense, one of the big problems with the approach is that the idea behind a strategy game or a grand strategy game or a 4X game is that everything is tied together. So when you explore the map, you're finding a mountain range, and that mountain range might have gold on it. And then you can mine that gold with units that you send there. And then that gold can be used to pay off somebody in diplomacy or hire a new unit or whatever else. Everything is very connected. Maybe an enemy attacks you and then they send an army around the mountains, and then you want to defend that gold mine. Everything is very much connected in a way that makes every part of the game meaningful. So that gold mine helps everything else matter more, and everything else helps that gold mine matter more. The problem is when you go into a tactical battle, suddenly you strip basically all of that context away. And some games will have a small amount of information that they pull in, like, okay, maybe it was, you know, a river tile, so now there's a river through the battlefield. But that's still just so loosely connected to the rest of the map that
right. It's
you're like, oh yeah, okay, you know, there's a river here, okay, sure. But it's not the same.
Yeah. I get you. It's literally creating a new game. I mean, it's the way that I think of it is it's creating a new game state, like a new system, but then it just like passes in a couple of integers, a couple of variables, Boolean flags into that state. But it's distinctly its own state that's totally separate from the greater system. And I really like what you say about how everything should be like sort of tied together in strategy games. And I think that's really true. And that, to me, like very much highlights why these kind of like screen, you know, game inside a game things tend to cause problems. And I agree that generally too, like combat in Civ games and these kind of games has always been strange. It's always been like this deformity. And actually one of the things I really was excited to talk to you about is I have such conflicted feelings about the one unit per tile thing in Civ 5 and 6, because like when I first heard about it, I was just so pumped. I was like, this is the best thing ever. Now we don't have the two screens. Now everything is all in one map. And I also particularly like in 6, the new district system, how they're taking cities as well and doing the same kind of thing with it, meaning like your city is not just all in one tile. It's not just a stack of doom of a city, but the city actually spreads out a little bit and uses the tactical map. And that sounds great. That all sounds great. And like on paper, it's great. But like, actually, though, what's interesting, you said another thing, which was some players like to play it like a war game. And, you know, what dawned on me in playing 5 and 6 is like, Civ is not a war game. I think, like, fundamentally, it's just not a war game. And the problem with this one unit per tile is that it makes the whole thing feel like it is. Like, it feels like it's, you know, a tactics game, but that I just have cities on. And so I feel like I should be fighting and should be, like, using, you know, zone of control and all these, like, tactical war game things. But at the same time, Civ is so fundamentally, like, I don't know. I just feel like it's not a war game. Does that make sense?
For sure. I tend to agree with you, actually, which might sound funny coming from the person who introduced that system to Civ in the first place. But yeah, I mean, it has a lot of good elements, and I know a lot of people enjoy it. And it's honestly, it's hard for, I think, a lot of 4X veterans to recognize this, but one unit per tile is more of a natural way for these games to play out. You think about a game like chess or checkers or Go, there are no stacks in those games. It doesn't, you know, make sense. Like, if you tried to put your queen on a pawn, it wouldn't even, you know, it wouldn't stay. It would fall off. So the fact that we can do these in digital games, or more complex war games, like you can have little stacks of chits or whatever, that's less accessible than the one unit per tile concept. So a lot of players actually prefer it for that reason and don't recognize a lot of the flaws with it. But over time, one of the things that I found was unfortunately the case is that the one unit per tile system not only kind of affected the feeling and the weight of the game, pushing it more towards military, like you said, but it also affected the economic side because there's only so much room on the map and you can't stack units, so they have to go somewhere. And if you have too many, then the map just fills up and nothing can move around and the whole world looks ugly because it's covered in a bunch of little units. So economically, you have to slow down the pacing of how quickly new units can be trained in order to prevent that. Hmm. So in a game like Civ 4, for example, it might only take 2 or 3 turns to train a unit in the early game. But in Civ 5, it takes 8 or 10. And that's in part because we didn't want there to be too many things running around on the map.
Mm-hmm.
So there were a lot of consequences to that decision that you know, weren't fully recognized until pretty far in. And, you know, ultimately, Civ 5 has been the most successful Civ game that's been released. So it's really hard to say that it was a complete mistake, but as a kind of tight, complete game design, I think it does have some fundamental flaws. And that's one of the reasons why in At the Gates, we've gone back to stacks. There are a couple twists in terms of like having a supply system and then basing combat on morale and forcing enemies to retreat rather than just doing raw amounts of damage. But it is basically back to a stack system.
I see. Interesting. Yeah. So, you know, it's funny you mentioned this thing about like, oh, it's kind of strange that I came up with this thing. And yet here I am like saying there's these problems with it. But I actually think, I mean, that's what makes, you know, someone really a game designer as opposed to just a game developer who's overseeing the design, is that you're sort of testing out these theories. And, you know, to me, disproving a theory is as valuable as proving one because, you know, it's like, who is it? Stephen Hawking. One of his big things was he disproved his own theory, if I recall correctly. not to compare, you know, what we're doing to that kind of work, but, you know, I think it's first of all, it's big of a person to be able to say like, yeah, this was a mistake. This was something. And it's also something that, I myself have been sort of, dealing with, we don't have to talk about this much, but like, I just wanted to mention that we both like mentioned something about Into the Breach, this, which is a tactical game that's just recently came out and, from the FTL developers. And, you know, I like it a lot, but it also made me like sharply realize something, one of my own, like, I don't know, mistakes is the right word, but massive changes in sort of philosophy about tactics games generally, which kind of feeds into our conversation here. But like, you know, so I've made historically tactics games, very tactical, not strategic big strategy games, but like little tactical games. And I've just recently been like struggling with some of those problems. And maybe I was like, I feel you on that, you know, disproving your own theory thing, because I feel like I've recently disproved for myself, at least, a theory that I previously had about tactics games. And that definitely feeds in a lot to our conversation about these, about combat and how would you do combat in a game like this. And I'm very pleased actually to hear you say that you're going back to a stack system, because, you know, pound for pound at the end of the day, I'm loving Civ 6. I love the latest. I love Civ 5. I love the Rise and Fall expansion. I've only played that a little bit so far. I'm intrigued by some of the new changes. And we could talk about that if you want. But I will say that probably the stack thing alone means to me that, like, maybe Civ 4 might still be my favorite Civ. And I hope that's not like mean to say or anything, but it's this it's that issue of, you know, all those issues of like feeling like clogged up with all these units and the combat thing. Yeah, it's an interesting question, I think.
Yeah, and I don't take offense at all. I think Civ 4 probably has been the best designed Civ. And honestly, that was one of the reasons why I was willing to take a lot of chances with Civ 5, because I didn't want to make Civ 4.5. Right. I think it would have sold, but would have sold as well? Probably not. And I'm just the kind of designer who wants to try new things, wants to try changing things up, experimenting. After I'm done with At the Gates, I'll be experimenting with new things. I don't want to kind of get typecast into any particular type of system or approach or design, or, eventually I'm probably going to branch out into other genres as well. So it's something where you kind of have to be flexible, I think. Civ 4 was an amazing game, and the combat system was probably one of the worst elements of it, honestly. And we said, hey, let's take a shot at this. And, I'm kind of conflicted in a way, because Civ has done quite well since then. As a designer, I would say, you know, that was an experiment that I don't think worked completely, and probably not something I'm going to incorporate in future games. I did think it was kind of interesting that they chose to keep the system with Civ 6. That was something I was thinking about a fair bit on my own before the game was announced. I was wondering, okay, are they going to stick with one unit per tile or switch back to stacks? And they ended up sticking with it. They kept quite a bit, actually.
Yeah, it's actually interesting that you, like, because I agree that as a, like, a subsystem itself, the Civ 4 combat is, like, bad. Like, it's not a good system, but it's interesting how sometimes making a individual, like, subsystem better makes the whole system worse, in that, you know, it starts fighting with other elements or whatever, and sometimes the answer is to have one subsystem be, like, the almost nothing that the Civ 4 combat is. You know, it's just literally, there's like not, it's all, it's just, you know, it's the reason I like it is that it's nothing is that it's subservient to the greater strategy game a little bit more.
Yeah, and I think it's a good lesson in terms of the fact that there is no perfect design for any particular game. You have to decide what your priorities are, what matters, what are your pillars going to be, and then you kind of put some stuff together, and, you know, you could tweak it here and there. Some changes are going to make some elements of the game better and other elements worse for, you know, most players, or some players might love this really nuanced feature here, but it confuses a lot of other people. It's kind of tough because, yeah, there is no perfect plan. It is absolutely art and not science. So
right.
I think as a designer, you kind of have to accept that and say, okay, well, it's not going to be perfect no matter what we do. So let's come up with a concept here that we think makes sense, and then try to reinforce that, to try and support that as best we can. And in Civ 4, Soren said, you know what, the combat system isn't that important, so it's going to be kind of subservient to some other elements of the game. And was the combat system in Civ 4 great? No, not really, definitely. But the game itself was great. So
yeah.
Sometimes you just have to make those trade-offs and say, this is what our game is, and not everything is going to be, you know, 100% across the board for everyone.
Yeah, to me, it's never about like perfect. It's always just about like what would be better, you know, like how can we make things a little bit better? So I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about diplomacy systems, which is another like big can of worms, kind of like combat, but maybe to me, now I'll start off by saying I'm just like I'm just thoroughly skeptical of diplomacy systems' entire like existence. I don't remember right now off the top of my head if At the Gates is what it's doing or what its plans are. You can talk about that. I'm very interested to hear that. But I'll just start off by saying, in my experience, they're either just like this black box of sort of random events that happens, or they are this little subsystem that you can just really take advantage of, and like, which is kind of like the combat problem, the tactical combat problem. It's this other system that's, you know, sort of like has a few variables connected to the greater system, but mostly is just this exploitable little machine. So, at the same time though, and this is another broader conversation about like, are these things fantasy simulators, or are they like strategy machines? And we can talk about that too. But like, to the extent that they are fantasy simulators, I also think that the diplomacy, some kind of diplomacy thing, is kind of a necessary part of that experience. So yeah, talk about diplomacy systems. What do you want to see in one? What's your feelings on them?
That's probably the final bullet point in terms of things that haven't worked out great in 4X so far that could be improved upon going forward. And it is something that I'm looking to kind of move the ball forward a little bit with At the Gates. As you say, it's an incredibly difficult challenge. I don't think any game's done it particularly well. I think some of the Paradox games make it interesting. I think King of Dragon Pass went with a much more character personality driven approach, more of a storybook or storyline approach that I think also has a lot of good merits, but doesn't necessarily translate over to a game like Civilization perfectly, for example. But yeah, I think your point that you could kind of go in two different directions is exactly right. Either you can make it this is just purely strategy. This is mechanics. It's just numbers. Or is this a fantasy simulator? Is this about giving the player a story and experience? And I think ultimately, unless you're making a pure tactics game, the latter is probably closer to the reality. So for me, I'm pretty serious about my strategy games. I think quite a bit about every move I take. I think probably way too much. This is why I don't do things like stream. It's also why whenever friends come over to watch me play anything, I always hand them the controller or the mouse, because if they watch me, they will be bored watching me mouse over things right for 10 minutes. But even though I'm quite deliberate, it's still about an experience. It's about how everything fits together. It's about, okay, well, now there's this gold. Okay, what can I do to get that gold deposit? Oh, you know, Attila came in and is denouncing me. Okay, I gotta deal with this guy. And I think if you can find some way to blend the personality with the mechanics, I think that's where the answer really lies. That's kind of the theory I'm going with At the Gates. So we're not doing anything too fancy in terms of trade. There's no trade screen. There's no list of resources or different things that can be swapped back and forth. That's kind of been the traditional pillar for diplomacy in past 4X games. And it's really just not that interesting. You make the trades that make sense, and right, then nothing else makes sense, so you don't really use it.
Sure.
So, you know, there's a ton of work that goes into these things as well. So at a certain point, I just said, you know what? Doesn't really make that much sense. Doesn't really add that much. Let's not go that direction. So instead, what we're going to do with At the Gates is an approach that's more personality driven, but also avoiding some of the mistakes of Civ 5, where things were very black box. Instead, it's going to be very clear. Okay, this person denounced this person. Okay, this has this effect. Okay, so if you denounce their enemies, then they'll like you more. If you go below a certain threshold, then an AI leader is virtually guaranteed to declare war on you and try to find other people to, you know, beat up on you or dislike you as well. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a game where you're keeping everybody off of your back in a way. And a lot of times it's difficult because different sides want different things from you. So two leaders might both give you an ultimatum to denounce the other leader, and you have to kind of decide which one to go with. So that's kind of where the personality comes in. And then the mechanics are, okay, well, this is a very concrete, discrete system. Here are the numbers. Here's how this works. So I'm trying to kind of split the difference in a way, and we'll see how it works out.
That's interesting because, so as someone who is generally just skeptical of diplomacy systems, my favorite diplomacy system in any 4X that I've played is actually Master of Magics. And it's largely because, again, it isn't one. It, like, barely is a system. It's really just, like, you're at war or not sometimes. Like, you know, like, and it feels to me, I like what you said about the discrete elements and the, like, hey, but go to war with him or me, you know, like that's your options right now. These very big, discrete things that feels better to me, you know, and still serves that fantasy. It's interesting to me that you see. So my philosophy about, I guess, games, strategy games is, or at least in most of my career has been like to largely abandon the fantasy simulation element, and or at least during the design phase to abandon that and just, you know, build a system like, forget about fantasy simulation for now. Like, what would we build just in terms of like, what would players, you know, making interesting decisions in a system that's like elegantly designed and all that kind of stuff. Like, how would we build that if we didn't have to worry about any of the fantasy simulation elements? And then maybe after you have a system, you can kind of like, build a new fantasy around the system that you have. And so it's interesting to me because you seem like a very mechanical driven designer, and, you know, systems designer. So it's interesting to me to hear you talk about the fantasy element and how that's important to you. And I guess I'm struggling a little bit with like how important it is to me. It's certainly important to most players. I think we can agree on that. But I also wonder, like, you know, maybe sometimes we just, maybe a fantasy is very important, but like, it doesn't have to be the fantasy that we're so used to seeing. Maybe it could be some other totally new fantasy that isn't like other fantasies we've seen in games before. Anyway, this is just a, I don't know, I can form this into a question exactly, but maybe you can respond to that general battle. I see it as a battle a lot of the time, a struggle between the pure systems design mindset and the fantasy simulation mindset.
Yeah, I'm actually, believe it or not, I start from the fantasy simulation end in a lot of ways. And I start from that place, and then it all kind of trickles down over time into mechanics. So I say, I want to make a game about barbarians that migrate around the map, and the seasons change over time. Okay, so there we go. Like, what does that look like in terms of mechanics? Okay, right. And then cycle back. Okay, well, you know, there's not really much going on in the economy. So mechanically, there's some challenges here. There's not that much going on. Okay, let's kind of go back to the drawing board a bit and introduce clans. Okay, now clans are the central element of the economy in the game. What can we do with clans now? Okay, clans have traits and personalities. They can have professions. Okay, those professions mean this. So I start from a very high level, and then I go down to mechanics, and then I kind of bounce back and forth almost in a way until, you know, over time, maybe the entropy drains from the system, and I kind of settle in a place. And it's something that I think has been pretty helpful, because I think I am pretty good with systems, but it's not my priority. It's not where I start. I recognize the fact that, you know, a river freezing over in the winter and being able to cross it is just a cool thing to have. And the fact that I've always worked on procedural games and probably always will, I can't really imagine doing an RPG or a shooter or something which has a fixed map, a fixed world, you know, a fixed, very finite set of items or weapons or whatever. I think that's kind of where a lot of the fantasy comes in. You put the building blocks in the world and then build algorithms that hopefully combine them in interesting ways, iterate on them, play the game, say, oh, this element works, maybe we can flesh that out a bit more. It's certainly challenging on the production end of things. I mean, obviously, I've been working on At the Gates now for, I don't know, 5 years or something silly. We're kind of closing in on the end here, finally. But yeah, it was there's certainly a price to that where, let's say, I don't know, a year and a half or 2 years into development, like I alluded to earlier, the economy of the game, the mechanics, the pacing just wasn't really coming together. We had the migration, we had the seasons, the map changing. It was really, really interesting concept, but the game wasn't really there yet. So I had to kind of step back and say, well, we need the feeling of building up something, the sense of progression, pacing. Because before the clans were in the game, there just wasn't that element. In Civ, you build up your cities, you build up the map, you have permanence, you feel like you're accomplishing something. But in At the Gates, because you were moving around all the time, you had no permanence. So that's kind of where the clans came in. And then that added a lot of time to the development. So, you know, sure. Again, it's if you're an indie and you can kind of set your schedule and you're willing to eat ramen, I guess, you know, having that flexibility can work. But, you know, for a bigger studio with a more fixed budget and schedule, it would probably not be as doable. So, yeah, I know it's something that kind of works for me, although I prefer my games to not take so long in the future. But yeah, it's something I think can be a challenge.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot to talk about there in terms of the sort of blue sky development problem where you can just sort of do anything you want and the strengths and weaknesses of that. It's rough. There's a couple more big 4X questions I want to ask you about before we run out of time. So I'm gonna head on to the next thing. Let's talk about match length, because I think that Civ games are all, in my opinion, like ridiculously long. And part of that might be because they feel long because they just start like sort of dying, like their interactivity just dies off at a certain point. But I also think just on a practical level, they're in a weird length of space. Like they tend to be 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 hours long, and it's just a strange amount of length to me. Like I guess the way I think about games is like you have, you know, the 50-60 hour experiences that you know you're going to be just dabbling at over a long period of time, and this is kind of arbitrary and maybe based on what people already expect, but beyond that, in terms of strategy games, I sort of, you know, I kind of want strategy games to maybe be like a half an hour long experience, maybe 2 hours. And this is sort of based on maybe board games, but maybe they could be even shorter than that. Like, what if we could have a complete Civ experience in 25 minutes or something? Is that possible? What do you think about the really long matches? And if 6 hours is okay, then what about 100-hour long Civ match? Like, how do you think about game length? Maybe for 4X games, but maybe also for strategy games in general.
That's a pretty tricky topic, honestly. It's not something I think about a whole lot, because I tend to, kind of starting from the fantasy simulation end again, I think about, okay, well, what is, like, let's stir this pot together, and then how long is the experience that pops out at the end? You know, a lot of times people ask me, okay, how long is the game supposed to be? And then for most of the development cycle, I have to say, I don't know. We'll see how long it's fun for.
Right.
Because a lot of times when you're adding content, things like technology trees and units and whatnot, you add more or less depending on what the game needs. Some designers will just come up with a big list at the start and throw it in and put it together, but I don't think that's necessarily the best way to go, because yeah, maybe the last third of the game isn't that fun, so you have all these units and techs and stuff that aren't that fun, and you don't have a really good way of improving that. I think this is one of the challenges with Civ. You know, we were touching upon it earlier. The kind of the modern era of the game just isn't all that much fun. Of course, Civ has the problem of, well, you need to include the modern era. You can't just leave that out of a game called Civilization. But I think in other games, I think there's more of an opportunity to kind of get away from those end games that don't really do much of anything. So, for example, in At the Gates, once the map, the exploration, the expansion part of the game is wrapped up, then there might be one little final act to play out, but then that's going to be it. There's not going to be another half of the game that just drags on forever. As for a half an hour game of Civ, I think you might be describing as Rise of Nations. the RTS from Brian Reynolds after he left Firaxis to start big, huge games. Of course, that's real time and not turn-based, of course, but that is, I think, kind of what the idea was. Yeah, so he basically had been playing a lot of Age of Empires 2 and had come off of Civ 2 and said, can we make a shorter version of Civ in real time? And then that was Rise of Nations, and that's pretty much the half-hour length game. I think with a turn-based game, it's going to be quite a bit more difficult to do that sort of thing just because the scope of the game, the amount of decisions that you can make with each individual city or unit, it's just going to end up dragging out. I don't think you could probably get it in under a couple hours. And I think that's kind of what Sid did with Civ Revolutions, which was the console version of Civ. Mm-hmm. I think he was able to shorten the game down to about a couple hours by streamlining a lot of the elements. But I think you would have a hard time reducing a 4X game to below a couple hours.
Interesting.
And on the extreme end, I've been engaged in some games of Civ that have gone on for hundreds of hours, although they were certainly non-traditional, in that they were a format called democracy games, where you basically run a Civ as a team, and then however you organize the team is up to the team. So you could have a cabinet with a war minister and an economic minister, or you could have a dictator that kind of decides everything and gets input from the team, or it could be pure democracy where basically nobody's in charge and you just vote on everything and then there's chaos. So I was engaged in this community for Civ 3 for quite a while, and some of my most fun Civ and gaming memories generally come from playing in those games. And between all the time I spent putting together spreadsheets and discussing plans with other players and putting together simulations and map editors and all sorts of other things, there were certainly some games that were probably over 200 or 300 hours, maybe, you know, more than that even. So I think there is a lot of room in the 4X space to allow for that sort of thing, although that's certainly, again, a pretty non-traditional format. But
That's really interesting. I actually was not aware of that format, and it sounds really cool. And actually, it leads really well into another question that I have, which is about multiplayer and designing Civ games or 4X games to be... So one of my other opinions about Civ is it has always struck me as sort of fundamentally a single-player experience, but that, you know, you can play multiplayer, but it's also sort of strange because you have these victory conditions that don't necessarily apply to multiplayer because, you know, I'm not going to let you get a civil, a cultural, like, I'm not going to just sit around while you get a culture victory. I'm going to, like, attack you. Whereas, you know, this kind of goes back to the diplomacy systems a little bit. But so I always see Civ games or 4X games as fundamentally like single player games, but then, you know, a lot of people play them multiplayer and are very into the multiplayer aspects of it. First of all, are you planning on doing multiplayer for At the Gates? But also, what do you think about the ramifications? Like, what does it enable you to do if you decide this game is just single player, or if you decide that, you know what I mean? Because, like, for me, I think... I would advise 4X designers to just make their game single player because that allows them to really like focus on that in a way that sometimes the multiplayer stuff can cloud. You know, you can't really have an asymmetric multiplayer sort of tends to force everything to this symmetric thing where it's like I have my Civ, they have their Civs, and we sort of are all doing using the same mechanics. And they're sort of like the AIs in Civilization are approximating the actions of a player controlling something like what you're controlling. Whereas if it's a single player experience entirely, that whole thing doesn't have to exist at all. There, you could just be the only civilization and there could just be a bunch of, you know, like barbarians or like some other system that there's no human AI analog for. And I don't know, it seems like it gives you a lot of flexibility, but I'm curious to hear your opinion on that kind of stuff.
I totally agree with you. I think it makes a lot of sense to kind of say that this game that we're making, the strategy game, is basically a single player game and then allow for multiplayer. I think that's probably my ideal approach. And sometimes things are going to be a little bit wonky, especially the more asymmetric the game is. But I think part of it is that playing multiplayer in a lot of these games is just fun, especially when you can play with friends and just kind of experience the fantasy simulation all together. I think that is something that is valuable, although making it more competitive is going to be tough, in part because there are just better options out there. If you want to play a MOBA, if you want to play Overwatch or something like that, those are just better multiplayer games, strictly speaking, for competitive multiplayer. It is also, multiplayer is a pretty big development challenge. It just requires quite a bit of the developers and is pretty expensive. I couldn't say how much of the budget on Civ 5 was spent on multiplayer, but it was a pretty significant chunk considering that only a very small single-digit percentage of players even ever played a multiplayer game once. At the Gates, by comparison, we are not doing multiplayer, and that's a decision that's basically because I don't really have time to implement it. It would be something I would like to have, but just realistically, if I had to spend 40% of my time getting multiplayer to work, then that's just not something that makes sense for this game. Mm-hmm. In the future, with bigger budgets and bigger teams, it's something that I think might make more sense, especially once we have a system kind of set up to allow for it more easily. But for a game like At the Gates with its scope and its budget, probably not something that makes the most sense. That's not to say that everyone agrees with you and I on that, though. I know that Soren Johnson, who designed Civ 4, for example, definitely would not agree. He designed Civ 4 actually as a multiplayer game first. So long before there was any AI code at all, people were playing full games of Civ 4, multiplayer, LAN, with just, we'd have six computers together in a pit and everybody be playing multiplayer together. And that's kind of how he developed and balanced a lot of the game. And certainly Civ 4 turned out pretty good, so it's hard to argue too much with that approach. Although Civ 4 is absolutely a very symmetrical game, certainly the most so of any Civ game. If you just look at the maps and the starting locations, for example, they are much more symmetrical in a lot of ways than, say, At the Gates, for example. And At the Gates, I wanted the maps and the terrain to be very dynamic, very realistic. You have big deserts and mountain ranges, and some people can get stuck in forests, and it's not really a very symmetrical starting position. We do some balancing to make sure that things aren't too crazy, but compared to Civ 4, it's completely different. So there are different approaches that can be taken there. But I think the kind of the future for 4X games is more in the direction of asymmetry, more in the direction of saying, okay, well, we'll kind of leave the competitive multiplayer to other genres, other games, and then kind of push more in the roguelike or just pure asymmetrical direction. I think we're going to see a lot more of that.
Win conditions. How do you feel? I'm going to guess, like, based on the other things that you've told me, I'm going to guess that you are for... You are for multiple win conditions, and is that correct?
I think generally yes.
Okay. Is there any, like, do you have any, I don't know, gripes with how win conditions are done in 4X games that you've seen in the past?
Oh, absolutely. I think this is kind of another issue with the genre, in part because I think the late game in a lot of 4X games is just poor generally. But yeah, it's a really tough problem, and to be perfectly honest, and I'm not necessarily proud of it, but I don't really think that much about victory conditions. And that might sound strange, but I think with a 4X game, the experience rarely is the thing that you remember about playing a game of Civ or playing a game of Europa Universalis or whatever, how you won in the end. It's always more about the story as a whole, about grabbing a certain piece of land or fighting a certain enemy or grabbing a wonder before somebody else did. Those are the stories that stick with people. And maybe that's, again, just because the late game has been so bad that people just generally don't get to the late game and don't finish and there are no really interesting stories. But the fact that the games are so long makes it hard to have a good late game at all. These games are big and complex. It's hard to get an early game working well, let alone an early game and a mid game and a late game that all are dependent on one another. So for me, it's almost kind of a hedge in a way, saying like, okay, well, the most important thing in the game is to have the thing that most people play most of the time be good. So, okay, early game is really important. Mid game is still important, but less so because fewer people make it that far. And, you know, if you have to allocate your limited resources, if the early game is mediocre, then if you have a great mid game, then that's not necessarily great. So it's a really tough thing in terms of, okay, ideally you can have a great early game, a great mid game, a great late game, and great victory conditions. But in games that take multiple hours, that involve these systems overlapping and procedural worlds, and you as the designer only have so much control over what's going on at any point as these players and stories kind of wind in different, interesting, often asymmetrical directions. Where do victory conditions fit into that? I think when you're talking about a game that's more focused on multiplayer, then victory conditions become very important. If you're talking about a game that's more asymmetric, a game that's more about the fantasy simulation necessarily, then I think the victory conditions kind of fade into the background a little bit. So with At the Gates, we actually will have basically only one victory condition. And that's not something I think is philosophically kind of the direction I want to go, but it is, okay, well, what is the game of At the Gates? And, you know, this is kind of the starting from the high level, like what do you do when you're playing? Like, what is it about? What is the feel? What is At the Gates? It's about, okay, you know, keeping a barbarian tribe alive, migrating around the map, settling down to build a kingdom, and then fighting the Romans and beating them in the end. So as long as you hit all of those beats and then fight off the Romans, then that's kind of what the game is. And if it specifically requires you to take Rome, or, you know, does diplomacy fit into there anywhere? Like, is there an economic victory condition? Like, in terms of pure mechanics, I think having a variety of different options to play through to the end makes a lot of sense. But in terms of the overall fantasy, how does it fit together? It's hard to say, you know, like, ultimately you want to bring the player and the Romans together in the end. But yeah, it's, you know, in case you couldn't tell, I have a lot of different scattered thoughts on this topic. And, you know, it's one of the areas of design where my thinking isn't completely set in stone yet. I think, you know, over time, I'll probably consolidate my thoughts a little bit more. But for now, honestly, it's like, okay, well, victory conditions honestly don't play that big of a role in a lot of these big grand strategy games. I mean, Paradox games generally don't even have victory conditions. Right. So,
I mean, no, that's totally like legit. The way I sort of divide this up and look at it is that you have things that are like, do you play like Euro games, like, you know, designer strategy board games? I'm sure you do, right?
Yes.
So like you have those kind of things, or I guess chess maybe falls into that category of these things that are just very, they're not very super thematic necessarily, or if they are, it's sort of incidental, and they're very much these like strategy machines. And there's those on one end of an axis, and on the other end of the axis would be like D&D. You know, of like, it's just, it's very much like there may be mechanics, but it's somewhat incidental. It's really about the fantasy. It's not at all about, you know, even mastery necessarily. It's just really just about experiencing this thing. And it sounds like, I guess the thing that's most surprising to me about this interview is that you are much more to the right of that spectrum, more towards the D&D element of that side of that spectrum than I would predict, I think. And it's interesting to think about, like, you know, the fact that these other big grand strategy games a lot of them don't have victory conditions, as you say. And I see them more as like, you know, like fantasy simulation sandboxes, I guess you could say. And does that sound like, and is that what you are maybe like leaning in the direction of? Because I think actually Civ is to the left of that, in my opinion, because it, you know, it does have concrete goals and people do kind of play it competitively and stuff. And so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, do you think of things along that axis? Does that axis like make sense to you? And do you see yourself as, I feel like, I don't know, sometimes I feel like it's good to just like dive hard into one of those directions. Like if fantasy is what you want, then there's a lot of like mechanical strategy game-y things that exist in 4X games that really can go there, or that, you know, can be a lot looser, or do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think the genre can afford to be quite a bit looser. I think games like Civ 4 have shown us probably what the tightest version of a 4X game can look like. And I think there's a lot more room on the other side of the spectrum that has yet to be explored. I think both elements are important, though, because, like, for example, in At the Gates, each individual decision that you make is much more significant than it is in just about any game of Civilization. Mm-hmm. So in Civ, you have a lot of units, you have a lot of cities, you're building a lot of things, you're researching a lot of things, and it's very easy to just click, 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 enter, and enter, and enter. And sure, you can't really do that in At the Gates. At the Gates is very much, okay, let me sit down and think about what this, like, what am I going to train here? Because I only have one production queue. So it kind of, it upgrades in terms of both mechanics and, I think, in terms of the fantasy. And kind of the downside of that, I think, is that it's going to be a little bit more hardcore. So casual players are going to have a little bit tougher time getting into the game, because some people just like to play Civ and zone out and enter and enter and enter.
Sure.
Like that's how they play the game. You can't really do that in At the Gates. So I think it's probably more than just a spectrum of left to right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a big part of it also is just game length. And this is something I was touching upon earlier, but to kind of draw in some of your examples, Dungeons and Dragons, if you're playing that, then that's something that, you know, generally goes on for a really long time. Ideally, those are the games that are fun. If you just, you know, sit down and play one session, then those aren't the really fun games.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if in games where there are more discrete victory conditions, those tend to be much shorter and generally games that you can finish in one sitting. So we were talking about Into the Breach earlier. Each map can be finished in, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes or mm-hmm. even less, depending on how quickly you go through them. So knowing exactly what you need to do in order to win or lose is super important in a game like Into the Breach, whereas in a game of Europa Universalis that takes, you know, multiple tens of hours, the victory condition isn't necessarily as important. And I think probably a dividing line depends on, can I finish a game in one sitting? If I can, the victory conditions are really important. If I can't, then it's probably more about the experience, the simulation, the fantasy simulation, however you want to refer to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's more about the experience. So if I had to decide one way or the other, I think that's probably the determining factor.
Cool. Yeah. So before we get finished, I wanted to let people know some stuff about At the Gates if they want to find out more. Like, can you give the pitch, like, or not the pitch, but like, you know, where can we go? Like, websites, what's new, what's happening, when's the game coming out, stuff like that.
Sure. So we have a website, atthegatesgame.com. You can also find more information about the game on my personal blog, johnschaferondesign.com. The game will be coming out later this year, hopefully. We might sneak into early next year, but we're starting to wrap up here. I'm putting on my producer hat more so than my designer hat, trying to wrap this thing up finally. If people are interested, you can get in on early access. We're not on Steam, but you can go to the website. We have the game for sale there, and you can get an early copy and help us out, give us some feedback. The game is coming along. It's quite a bit of fun, not quite done yet. So, we hope people will check it out when we're finished. And, appreciate everybody giving it a shot and paying attention to what we're doing. Hopefully we can push the strategy genre forward a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm, you know, you're one of, I don't know, like 10 designers that I'm always following. And, you know, I'll definitely always be playing anything you put out. And because, you know, I can tell that you're a person who cares a lot about, you know, like you just said, progressing the discipline of game design and of strategy game design specifically, which, you know, I'm very interested in. And there's not a lot of people really working on that problem. And so, yeah, thank you so much for coming on the show. And I hope we can do this again sometime.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. Like I said, talking game design is fun. It's a thing I think about a lot. Yeah, even if I'm not quite the mechanics designer you thought I was, you know, I try to balance it out in both ends. It's not just one or the other. So,
well, no, yeah, I mean, you know, I don't want to talk about. Exactly. I don't want to just talk to mirror images of myself anyway. I want to, you know, be challenged and think about things in new ways. So yeah, it's perfect. Yeah, I think you're just different enough that it becomes an interesting conversation.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's something where my approach and my thinking has definitely changed a lot over my career, and I'm sure it still will going forward. So there's plenty more interesting design challenges to take on and discussions to have down the road. So looking forward to it.
Great. Well, thank you again so much for coming on.
Absolutely. Thank you.